On this Friday night, safe to land, the investigation into the near disaster on the runway and what we've learned about the decision to put the plane down in a driving snowstorm. Also caught on camera, Harrison Ford's plane going down. Tonight, the doctor who pulled him from the wreckage and why witnesses say the actor may have saved lives. Our NBC News investigation into cosmetic procedures being done by doctors who may not have adequate training and patients may have no idea. And marching forward, 50 years since a violent day changed the course of history, the men and women who marched in Selma on the powerful message they're passing to a new generation. Nightly News begins now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News. Reporting tonight, Lester Holt.
Good evening and thanks for being with us. One was loaded with passengers and flying into the teeth of a snowstorm and nearly into icy waters. The other flown by a world-famous movie star who nearly crashed into a row of homes. Two plane accidents, both skirting the edge of disaster and still getting a lot of attention tonight for all the questions they raise about our safety. We'll get to the Harrison Ford crash in a moment, but we begin with new information about that Delta Airlines plane that slid off the runway at New York's LaGuardia Airport yesterday. And there is new focus on the airport itself and whether it was safe to fly at the time. Tom Costello remains on that story for us tonight.
Inside a hangar at LaGuardia Airport today, the Delta Airlines jet that went off runway 13 in a snowstorm yesterday morning. Its nose ripped off, the left fuel tank ruptured. Overnight, Port Authority crews used cranes to move the plane. By mid-morning, the runway had reopened for traffic.
Tower, Delta 1086, joining you, ILS runway 13.
Also today, further evidence the pilots thought they were in for a routine landing as they checked in with the tower, which reported two previous planes had just landed without a problem.
And Delta 1086, LaGuardia Tower. Wing 030 at 9R, runway 13, clear to land. Brake connection reported good by an Airbus and a regional jet.
The question tonight, did the plane's speed, brakes, or thrust reversers play a role as the plane suddenly careened off the runway up an embankment and through a fence, stopping just inches from the water? It's up to each airport to decide when to close runways due to weather. On Thursday, LaGuardia's airport manager, Car 100, was on the ramp supervising snowplow operations. He's the one who closed the airport after the crash.
Tower, you copy. Car 100. Runway 13 is closed.
Today, my plane came in over that same ice-filled Flushing Bay. Sitting right on the water, LaGuardia's shorter runways means pilots must be at their best when they come in for a landing, especially if that water is splashing onto an icy runway.
It, by being about 7,000 feet long on both runways, is a place that you want to put the airplane on the ground very definitely, firmly.
Sitting in a window seat, watching the crash unfold before her eyes, passenger Jamie Primick Sullivan.
And then I saw the rocks, and then I saw the water, and it's at that moment that your mind goes, what happens if you go into the water? Do planes sink? Do they float? Will I ever see my kids again?
Tonight, the NTSB tells NBC News it has successfully downloaded the data from the cockpit voice and the flight data recorders, and they have good data for the entire duration of the flight. They're hoping to talk to the pilots sometime over the weekend at Delta headquarters in Atlanta. Meanwhile, Delta says it is now refunding the passengers the entire fare from their airline trip. Lester?
Tom Costello in New York tonight. Thanks. Now to that other flight gone terribly wrong, the small plane crash with legendary actor Harrison Ford at the controls. Ford is expected to make a full recovery while investigators look for the reason his plane went down. Here's NBC's Miguel Almaguer.
Today, NTSB investigators trying to determine why this vintage World War II plane plummeted out of the sky.
I hope he's going to make it.
Losing altitude moments after takeoff, Harrison Ford had to act quickly.
53178, engine failure, immediate return.
Ryan 178, runway 21, clear to land.
Cell phones capturing the harrowing moments as Ford goes down fast.
Well, he's going to land on the golf course.
The single-engine plane clipped a tree, sliding onto a golf course next to the Santa Monica Airport. Golfers scrambled to pull Ford from the wreckage. Among them, Dr. Sanjay Khurana, a spinal surgeon.
He was wiggling about. He appeared to be conscious, and there was fuel leaking.
This was the route Ford was flying. Departing runway 21 on a clear day, then banking 180 degrees when he reported engine failure. Ford was piloting from the rear seat.
Any time that a human being can survive an accident involving an airplane or any type of mechanical, it's a good day.
Ford is a veteran pilot who's flown relief missions to Haiti and once helped rescue a Boy Scout lost in Yellowstone. The actor even joked about a 1999 crash landing.
What happened to your helicopter?
It broke.
This is the real Indiana Jones.
I broke it.
This is what you see every day, huh?
That's what I see every day. That's what I hear every day.
Just across the street from Thursday's crash, Carlos Gomez says he's lucky Ford is a skilled pilot who avoided homes and may have saved lives.
Certainly did what solved the situation so that only his life was at risk and not others.
With family members saying Ford had minor surgery for broken bones, he was brought here to Ronald Reagan UCLA Medical Center, where he was listed in fair to moderate condition. Lester.
All right, Miguel, thank you. More encouraging news on the American economy today. We learned employers added 295,000 jobs in February. That makes 12 consecutive months of at least 200,000 jobs added. The first time that's happened since 1977. The unemployment rate dropped to 5.5%. That's the lowest since May of 2008. A troubling area of concern, though, remains hourly wages, which continue to stagnate. And a tough day on Wall Street. Investors figuring that an improving jobs market means an interest rate hike could come sooner rather than later. Attorney General Eric Holder today said the Justice Department would use its full authority to reform the Ferguson, Missouri Police Department, which could even mean dismantling it entirely. This after a blistering report alleged a pattern of racial bias among Ferguson's authorities. So far, two officials have resigned in the wake of that report. A third was fired. But as Ron Allen reports, the problems may extend far beyond Ferguson.
Now, backed by the findings of a scathing federal investigation, renewed demands for a complete overhaul of Ferguson's police force.
Who killed Mike Brown?
Ferguson police!
Ferguson, now among more than 20 police departments the Obama administration has investigated for allegedly racist practices. From Albuquerque to Cleveland to Newark. Most agree to legally binding reform plans, consent decrees, but the Justice Department has sued at least four jurisdictions that have resisted. Analysts say constant oversight is essential.
Where the government has simply entered into an agreement and then basically walked away, I think we've seen that doesn't work.
But even in cities like New Orleans, nearly 3 years under a consent decree, critics say police still use excessive force, make illegal stops, searches, and other misconduct.
With more people watching, you know, I can only hope that it's going to get better. But I'm still skeptical because the problems have been here for a very, very long time.
Ferguson, population just over 20,000, is one of the smallest towns DOJ has investigated. And here, with both the police and the courts under scrutiny, many worry about the town's future. Ryan Fletcher is a former mayor.
What does it mean to this town to have this hanging over it now?
Well, it means economic development slows down. It might cause some residents to relocate out of Ferguson.
The United States Department of Justice reserves all of its rights and abilities to force compliance.
Ferguson's leaders say they'll cooperate, but have not yet signed a legally binding agreement. While calls for change echo on the streets. Ron Allen, NBC News, Ferguson.
A federal grand jury could bring charges against a prominent Senate Democrat later this month, according to sources familiar with the case. New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez is the subject of a corruption investigation over jet trips he took on the private plane of a Florida eye doctor. Federal prosecutors want to know whether Menendez exchanged political favors in return. Both the senator and the doctor deny any wrongdoing. At the start of this newscast, we told you about two very close calls involving airplanes. Already, we know a lot more about what happened to those planes than what happened to Malaysia Airlines Flight 370, which almost exactly a year ago vanished, cloaked in mystery and suspicion. And while searchers hold out hope the plane will be found, for the families of the missing, there are only memories and unanswered questions.
I still remember just grabbing his hand, saying, "Be safe, see you later," and giving him a hug, and It's burned in my mind.
James Wood recalling the last time he saw his big brother, Philip. It was just a week before Philip and 238 others boarded Malaysia Flight 370 from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing, a flight that was initially reported as overdue.
At that point, I'm just imagining here that you're thinking this is going to be bad news and we're going to get confirmation.
Something, yeah. Soon. Yeah. And, or either mess up, turn around, they just lost track of it.
The plane didn't crash somewhere along its planned route. Instead, it appeared it was flown into oblivion.
Good night, Malaysia 370.
That was the last message from MH370. 41 minutes into the flight, the mystery began.
I'm going to select heading, and now I'm going to turn to the left.
In a 777 simulator, we duplicated the sharp left turn that came next, sending MH370 on a mystifying journey, ultimately towards the Indian Ocean.
Is there anything that would make this plane make that kind of turn absent a human either pushing buttons in this computer or dialing in this autopilot?
Nope.
Adding to the intrigue, the plane's transponder and other communication systems were disabled.
It was really what's been described as the hook turn. That's where this event really started to develop from a normal routine flight to what has been deemed either an accident or an intentional act.
Early focus turned to the captain, Zahari Shah. Authorities wondered if he was using his home flight simulator to practice the vanishing act. A friend tells NBC News he doesn't buy it.
He would be the one that had been trying to save the plane.
While there are still only theories as to what happened on board the plane, search vessels may be on track to finding it. After crunching satellite signals and aircraft performance data, experts believe it crashed within a 23,000 square mile arc along the South Indian Ocean.
That is where, in very high degree of certainty, but not absolute certainty, we know that the aircraft is going to be.
In the meantime, absent the discovery of any wreckage, James Wood has not let his brother go.
Just tell me about your brother, what kind of guy he is.
He is kind, generous.
You're obviously struggling with present tense, past tense. Where are you on this?
Both. Logically, I say past tense, but my heart still says present tense.
The painful wait goes on for the families. In January, Malaysian authorities declared it an accident and declared the passengers and crew dead, but offered no positive proof. Meantime, Australian officials expect to end their current search operation in May. A busy night of news still ahead, including our NBC News investigations about a growing number of family doctors, gynecologists, even dentists performing certain cosmetic procedures with limited training. And patients may find out the hard way. And later, the youngest person to stand in March with Dr. King in Selma returns tonight with a powerful message.
How many of you believe?
We're back now with an NBC News investigation. With growing demand for cosmetic procedures in this country, more and more doctors, even dentists, are learning how to do them. But the concern here is they may not be getting enough training to do them safely, and patients may not know. We get more on this tonight from our senior investigative correspondent, Cynthia McFadden.
57-year-old Stephanie Gelsner was a new grandmother, and like a lot of women, she decided to get a little Botox. She went to the Silhouette Med Spa in Livermore, California.
I wanted to just spruce up a little bit.
While she was there, the staff encouraged her to try other services as well.
I did have a little spot on my cheek. A little teeny red bump. Yeah, it was pretty small.
Dr. Tam Nguyen is one of the owners of the spa. He said he could fix the spot and get rid of two veins on her temple.
He said, I'll do all three for $200.
What she didn't understand was that Dr. Nguyen is a family practice doctor, not a licensed dermatologist or plastic surgeon. He's one of an increasing number of family practitioners, gynecologists, even dentists, taking weekend courses similar to this one to expand their practices to include cosmetic procedures. Why? Some say it's about the money.
You can triple your revenue per patient per year.
But sometimes, according to dermatologists, a handful of weekend courses just isn't enough. This is what Stephanie's face looked like 10 days after the procedure.
It was a traumatic experience.
Your face was a mess.
Yeah, for 3 weeks I didn't leave the house.
Dr. Nguyen's office agreed to refer her to a dermatologist, Dr. Jerome Potoskin. He examines Stephanie and says Dr. Nguyen should never have injected her face with the chemical he used.
The procedure is called sclerotherapy. It's used most commonly for leg veins.
Dr. Potoskin says the side effects for injecting the face with this chemical can be severe, including even blindness.
This requires to be done by the experts of the experts.
And that wasn't Dr. Nguyen. Dr. Nguyen told us he had been to 6 workshops or conferences that ran from 2 to 4 days long and participated in 2 other one-day laser courses.
Be careful with their prescription.
Yes. He agreed to meet with us at his spa.
So what happened? What went wrong?
So my best estimate is that the agent got outside of the lesion.
It seems to me to be clearly a mistake.
Not necessarily. Just because a bruising occurred doesn't mean that it's a mistake.
So you stand behind the work?
I do stand by that.
And you think that the seminars that you've attended provide enough training to be able to do these really tricky procedures on people's faces?
So it's the same training that even dermatologists get after they graduate.
That's misleading, says Dr. Potoskin. After graduating from medical school, dermatologists have 3 years of intense training to treat the skin.
You don't learn this in a weekend.
As for Stephanie Gelzer, the scar on her face is almost gone. But the emotional scars, she says, remain.
Don't do what I did. Be smart. Do your homework. Check out exactly what's being shot into your face. And who is doing it? Now, Dr. Nguyen told me he's not doing it for the money, but rather to help people, and that the dermatologists are just upset that he and others like him are taking patients away from their business. Now, the bottom line, Dr. Nguyen is doing nothing illegal, but critics say he is misleading patients and putting them at risk.
It's important. Thank you very much, Cynthia McFadden. We're back in a moment with ISIS declaring war on history. Seems these images may have only been the beginning. ISIS has sparked new outrage tonight with reports that it is systematically demolishing a priceless archaeological site. Just last week, we saw heartbreaking images of militants destroying irreplaceable artifacts in ISIS-occupied Mosul. Today's report says that ISIS is bulldozing the ancient city of Nimrud in northern Iraq. These are filed pictures. No video has yet surfaced. A top UN official called it a war crime, the deliberate destruction of humanity's cultural heritage. This weekend, the first family will travel to Selma, Alabama, to mark 50 years since a monumental moment in the civil rights struggle. That day in 1965, while stunning and the violence inflicted on peaceful protesters, galvanized a movement. Tonight, our Kristen Welker brings us the story of that march on Selma as seen through the youngest eyes there that day.
A painful past is coming back to life in Selma today as people arrive from all across the country to remember what happened on this bridge 50 years ago. March 7th, 1965, Bloody Sunday. A group of activists risked their lives for freedom, equality, and the right to be treated fairly. Cheyenne Webb Kreisberg was the youngest person there. She was just 8.
Racism just unleashed its brutality upon us. People had begun to be beaten down with billy clubs as if they weren't even human beings. Tear gas had begun to burst in the air, and people had begun to run for their lives. I was running, trying to make my way back.
Cheyenne made it home that day, and 2 weeks later, the marchers made it all the way to the capital, Montgomery, a 54-mile trek, a turning point in American history.
How long? Not long.
And the man who inspired the movement also shared this moment with little Cheyenne.
Why are you a martyr?
So we can be free and just, and so other people can be free, and so the troopers can't hit no one.
Can't help but to reflect and remember that moment, being with such an extraordinary man.
But other activists now in their 60s, 70s, and older say the march continues because of incidents like Ferguson and the Supreme Court's recent altering of the Voting Rights Act, undoing the crux of what they fought for.
We have got to stay focused and move forward and show up to the voting polls.
For Cheyenne, it's about teaching the next generation about the people who paved the way for them, one person, one step at a time. Kristen Welker, NBC News, Selma, Alabama.
A day not to be forgotten, and a reminder, NBC News will have complete coverage of the commemoration in Selma tomorrow. That's going to do it for us this Friday night. I'm Lester Holt. Thank you so much for joining us. Remember to spring forward and move your clocks ahead 1 hour before you go to bed Saturday night. Have a good night and a good weekend.